In a recent article in Newsweek magazine, Fareed Zakaria questioned the strength of the military presence in Iraq, not just in terms of numbers alone, but also in terms of its legitimacy with Iraqis. Fareed Zakaria is the editor of Newsweek International, a columnist for the weekly magazine. His book, The Future of Freedom, Illiberal Democracy at Home and Abroad, has recently been re-released in paperback, and he joins us from our bureau in New York, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
Okay. Spain, as we have also been talking about today, announced today that it'll pull its soldiers out of Iraq. Again, you know, that's a campaign promise by the newly installed prime minister. How does that decision, again, not just in terms of the numbers of Spanish soldiers, but the effect on the allies, how's that going to affect the U.S.-led forces there in Iraq?
Well, obviously, it's unfortunate. It's particularly unfortunate because, like so much of what has happened in Iraq, it was avoidable had the administration been willing to be more diplomatic. The Spanish prime minister gave himself an out. He said, I will withdraw forces unless the UN assumes political control in Iraq. We are moving in that direction. Surely there would have been a way of coming up with some kind of compromise formula that he could have lived with. But my sense is that this administration doesn't try very hard on those kinds of issues. Their feeling is, as the president often says, you're either with us or against us. And in that kind of circumstance, I guess the Spanish chose that they didn't want to play.
Yet last week, UN envoy Lakhdar Brahimi suggested a structure for the future Iraqi transitional government. That's been embraced by the president and Prime Minister Blair.
Well, it's been embraced out of sheer desperation. It took about 3 tries by the UN to ask for a certain degree of authority before they finally got it. And even now, it is not clear whether or not the UN will have sufficient control post July 1st to be able to turn this into an international project as opposed to an American occupation.
One of the things that has to be disturbing to anyone who looks at the situation in Iraq has been the recent performance of Iraqi forces. Again, famously, some units declined to go to Fallujah. In the long run, is that not a more disturbing situation?
It's all disturbing, unfortunately, but absolutely. The only saving grace, if there is any, is that this was all utterly predictable, by which I mean to say it is not a natural consequence of creating an Iraqi army. It is a natural consequence of creating an Iraqi army on the cheap and in 3 months. It's impossible to do that. It's never been done anywhere else. It took us 5 years in the Balkans. The original study done for the CPA, the coalition, by Bernard Kerik, the former police chief of New York, said it would take about 5 years. And we decided, well, we didn't want American troops to do this, so we were going to compress that 5-year time span into an 18-month time span. Well, guess what? It doesn't work. And it doesn't work because it's not just a question of equipment and things like that, as the president seemed to imply in his news conference. You have to socialize people into thinking of themselves as members of a national Iraqi army and not Sunnis and Shias and Kurds. And that does take a certain amount of time.
And is this not also reflected in the strategy of where American and its allied forces have been locating themselves, not in the heart of Iraqi cities, but outside of them, in hopes that Iraqi police and civil defense forces would assume the security task in the cities themselves?
This is probably the biggest mistake, even bigger than going in, as is now famously accepted, I think, by most people, except, of course, the administration, going in with too few troops. The mistake is what we asked these troops to do. They were not asked to engage in what has come to be recognized as the crucial elements of peacekeeping, which is reducing crime, providing stability, keeping order, making contact with locals. Instead, what our forces do is they are, as you say, holed up in cantonments and camps outside cities, and they really fight the bad guys, the insurgents, and protect themselves, false protection. Well, think of it from the point of view of an average Iraqi. His experience of the American military is that it does nothing for him. The insurgents, after all, are not attacking ordinary Iraqis. They're attacking American soldiers or Americans. The fact that the American forces protect themselves, well, again, that doesn't help an average Iraqi. So the average Iraqi says, you have the most powerful military in the history of the world, you liberate us, quote unquote, and my life is more insecure today than it was under Saddam Hussein. I can't take my kids to school, I can't shop in a market, crime is up, there's a pervasive sense of instability. what have you done for me?
And now you have a situation where many of the roads leading in and out of Iraqi cities, and in Baghdad in particular, have become so dangerous that the lifeblood of the country and ultimately the thing that will get Iraq up and moving again, its economy, has in some respects ceased to function.
Well, when people tell you that it's not as bad as some of us have been arguing it is for the last 6 months, the roads being closed is in a way the final element of this besieged sense that we have about Iraq. Remember that the Iraqi airport, the Baghdad airport, is still not open to commercial traffic. Now, there are about 40 war zones in the world. There are only two places that I know of where you cannot land commercial aircraft, Mogadishu and Baghdad. And it says something that after 1 year of American occupation, 1 year after the liberation, you still cannot fly a commercial plane into the Baghdad airport. And the only ones that can be flown are military airplanes that do these elaborate corkscrews to avoid being hit by missiles.
As you look at the situation now, and we've been describing perhaps what has gone wrong in the past, do you see, and we were talking earlier with a couple of members of the Senate Armed Services Committee, do you see that the need exists for a large increase of American forces in Iraq? And if so, where will those troops come from?
Unfortunately, I think it's inevitable. Well, I should say that the need is very strong. I don't know that the administration will do it. But you cannot stabilize Iraq on the number of troops we have right now, particularly because they are now stretched thin doing the kinds of missions you were describing, protecting highways and such. You will have to put more troops in. It would be nice if we could get foreign troops. It'd be nice if the Iraqis were trained. Right now, they're not. Right now, our choice is continued instability, spiraling downward, or a bulked-up presence temporarily. There are forces. Look, I mean, your previous guest was talking about the structure of the American army. We have three or four divisions that are planning, you know, what to do if the North Korea invades South Korea. Well, I'm going to confidently predict that it won't happen in the next 3 to 4 months. And that isn't the kind of conflict we should be prepared for anyway. It's highly unlikely. We could, by cobbling together various brigades out of divisions, probably add 60 to 70,000 troops in Iraq. I advocate it only as a temporary measure. By July, you will have a UN-backed new Iraqi government. That should provide some opportunity for some foreign forces. In 6 months, you will have Iraqi troops that have been trained properly. That will relieve some of the pressure. But nothing will be possible if you cannot get Iraq more secure in the short term.
Fareed Zakaria is editor of Newsweek International. His most recent book, The Future of Freedom, Illiberal Democracy at Home and Abroad, is just out in paperback. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As you describe this situation in Iraq and the dire straits that many Americans would say that the armed forces are in at this point, and a number of casualties continues to rise, and that's of great concern, along with the extension of tours by reservist guardsmen and of course, the active service as well. Some people would say, isn't it time to come to the conclusion that it's time to look for a way out of Iraq, and that this is time to draw down and see if we can transfer this to the United Nations and look for a graceful way out?
I don't think we're there yet for two reasons. First of all, you can't actually leave in the midst of the current climate, because not only will you leave and Iraq will be literally a kind of failed state, a Chechnya except with all kinds of Islamic terrorists, radical theocrats in the most politically sensitive and unstable part of the world. But you will be leaving a country you invaded. I mean, it's all very well to say, you know, about the Iraqis, well, ultimately it's their country. Yes, it is their country, but we did invade it. So you do have certain obligations, both political, moral, but also geopolitical. I am willing to say that, look, if you can get the situation stable and you can transfer power to some kind of credible Iraqi force, it's an interesting debate as to whether we should then continue to make the push for building and strengthening institutions in Iraq, building Iraqi democracy, or say, look, at this point, let's find a quiet way out. You can't do it until you have some degree of stability. You can't pull out and leave kind of marauding bands of militias around the country, we will be leaving a country that will then turn into a kind of Chechnya in the middle of the Middle East.
Yet you also have a situation, a conundrum facing American forces at this point. Negotiations, we're told, are underway in Fallujah that may involve a surrender of heavy weapons by the insurgents there, but there's still the ongoing crisis in Najaf, which is a city that is extremely special to Iraqis. And given developments over the past few weeks, Fallujah is rapidly acquiring that same kind of status, too. Do Americans make their writ run in places like Fallujah and Najaf? They run great risks if they don't as well.
I think that we have thought about this in slightly the wrong way. The key here is to deal with Iraq politically, not militarily, when facing these kind of challenges. You simply cannot win militarily. If you do something like Fallujah, as we did, the amount of anti-Americanism you produce in pacifying, a terrible word, pacifying Fallujah, far outweighs whatever military victory you gained. I'm not even sure what it means to say we have a military victory when you've killed 600 people. We're not even sure who they are. We're not sure that they were insurgents. It just proves that we have a lot of firepower, which God knows we don't need to prove. The key is politically marginalizing these people, which means co-opting some of the leaders of the Sunni community, means getting the Shia leaders to marginalize Muqtada al-Sadr. I think this is an elementary rule of guerrilla warfare. It's understandable that the army wants to fight the insurgencies this way. That is what armies tend to do. But that's why you have civilian control of armies. That's why you have political leaders who are meant to be deeply involved in the strategy. One of the most disheartening things to me has been the way in which President Bush and even Secretary Rumsfeld seem to hide behind the military when asked questions about military strategy, where they say, well, the commanders will get whatever they want. They haven't asked for more troops. This is, quite frankly, nonsense. Every serious political leader, strategist, has to be involved in these issues because the military are not going to worry about political goals as much as politicians do. They will have a narrower military approach, which is entirely understandable.
Fareed Zakaria, as always, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Fareed is editor of Newsweek International. He's a columnist for Newsweek magazine and the author of The Future of Freedom, Illiberal Democracy at Home and Abroad. He was with us from NPR's bureau in New York. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.